This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, Hockey News Podcast is back. Matt Larkin here with Ken Campbell and Ryan Kennedy. And a lot to talk about. We just got back from the All-Star Weekend. I guess right off the top, I'm not sure if you guys have been reading the news on Twitter, but we do have a major announcement. We have new ownership. We were purchased. We just got that bombshell news by Rooston Media. Graham Rooston, if you heard the name before, he's the former owner of Bauer. Big player in the industry. And if anybody's wondering, yes, it's very good news for us. We're super excited about it. And yeah. It was very exciting to get this finally confirmed over the weekend.
I agree. Yeah, great days ahead.
For sure. And if you're wondering how it affects things like the podcast, our prediction is it'll only affect it for the better. You might even hear more podcasts from us, but it's going to be an exciting few months as we get sorted out. So now that we got the business news out of the way, we can get to the hockey news. Did you guys have fun in Tampa Bay? Did you check out the Pirate Festival or what?
Yeah, I had a great time. I mean, the hockey was dreadful.
You didn't watch it.
I know. Skills competition sucked and the game was terrible and I hated every second of that. But other than that, I had a great time. Tiki Bar was awesome on Saturday night.
It wasn't a Tiki Bar.
It's a Tiki. We call it the Tiki Bar. It's across the street from the arena. Anyways, yeah. That was great. Pirate Festival added a whole bunch of fun to the whole weekend. I checked it out for a little bit on Saturday afternoon, went down to a couple of food trucks and saw a bunch of people having a great time. And it was I think Tampa, actually, you know, kudos to Tampa. I thought the Lightning put on a great show. Mm-hmm. And I think what we have to remember, too, is this was kind of jammed into the schedule, right? Because mm-hmm. they didn't know they weren't going to the Olympics for, you know, until the summertime.
They kind of had to
jam it in there. And I think for doing that, you know, for having kind of a quote unquote rush job, I thought Tampa did a really, really good job with it. And it was a really good time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like slightly opposite to you in that I enjoyed some of the game festivities. I thought, you know, like some of the players in particular, like Jack Eichel and Austin Matthews, like really showed off their personalities and we saw some fun moves. But with the Pirates, maybe because I've been into Pirates for a long time, the sort of like commodification and drunkification of Pirates, it's just like not my thing. So I saw lots of Pirates leaving our hotel, very excited about an afternoon of drinking.
There was one guy on the bus to the NHL party on Friday night. You guys weren't on the same bus as we were, but there was a guy on the bus and he was sitting at the front and he was one of the VIPs. He wasn't a media guy. He was wearing a big pirate hat and all he did was sit there and go, "Arr, and I'm going to take my scabbard out if you don't turn this bus around." And, and anyways, it was funny for about, I'm going to say, 12 to 15 seconds.
Right.
The first 12 to 15 seconds, it was funny.
Did it get funny and then not funny, but then funny again after it continued long enough?
No. It just stayed not funny and really annoying for the whole trip.
I heard a woman literally say yo ho ho and a bottle of wine, and I'm like, that's the problem with this whole thing. It's like all of our aunts got together in Tampa Bay.
That's fair. Yeah. And one thing I thought was fun though is during like random player interviews, like not the ones in the media day, but the ones that were sort of in the hotel that I did a couple, like it'd be mid interview and I listened to back to my recordings and you hear like a drunken fan being like, "Yeah, buddy, yeah!" Like some pirate would just yell because they were excited to see the player. So it was pretty funny. Add that little element of danger. I liked Save Streak because I think it's a cool new event. I think what's special about it is it has a tangible number now that goalies can try and beat for years to come. And those have always been the marquee events, right? Hardest shot, fastest skater. It's something tangible. And I think I talked to the goalies after, and they all seem to really like it. Especially Connor Hellebuyck. That dude had a blast. He had so much fun all weekend. He was the guy I noticed the most that was just taking it all in. But now it's like, okay, the record's 14 saves, and maybe next year some goalie gets 18, and if the event sticks a few years from now, it could be, oh my God, someone got 25 saves in a row. And it kind of started as a slow burn.
Seriously, this is what you're going with here?
Yeah.
You're getting excited about this thing? Sure. For the most part, the whole thing was for the most part, the whole thing was patently unwatchable.
Oh, the rest of it I thought was terrible. Patently I thought it was the worst skills competition I've ever seen. I think the passing drill was embarrassing. It was awful.
Yeah.
I just liked Save Streak. I thought that was a good addition, but overall, I thought it was a terrible skills competition.
And I will say, with the Save Streak, the other thing that I really liked about it was that the shooters were bringing some really nice moves to the table. And you know, we used to have the shootout competition where guys would try to do fun things or they would wear costumes, and it didn't quite work because you need to score for the great like lacrosse dangle thing to work, or you know, whatever, sliding across the ice. And if you didn't score, that's like, oh well, I mean, you didn't score. So it's not like the slam dunk competition in basketball where it's unguarded. There was always a goalie there. But in this case, you had guys trying, but there was that little edge of, I'm going to do something I wouldn't do in a game because this is a skills competition. So you had Kucherov with that great faker move. You had Barkov with a really nice one on his first attempt. So you got that nice dynamic shootout skill along with the goalies. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a nice sort of middle ground for a skill that has been tough to promote in the past.
Right, and even Marc-Andre Fleury pointed out after, when I was doing my little goalie poll, he said, like, it was fun that players were actually trying and that it was more like a real game situation. And Pekka Rinne said, we finally have a contest that's for us. And I think his quote was, like, normally the goalies are just the cones. And
right.
He meant to say pylons, but cones, you know, close enough. And he was like, we're just the cones in all these things. So he was excited that it was finally an event that showcased the goalies, where you're actually cheering for saves instead of goals.
Right.
I think part of my whole problem with this thing is that, you know, they shouldn't even have had an All-Star game this season. They should have been going to the Olympics. I'm still bitter about it. I'm almost at the acceptance part of the seven stages of grief for all of this. So I'm almost there. I'm almost there, but I'm not quite there yet. And I just think this whole, you know, boondoggle, it just bothered me on so many levels. And
I'm not gonna lie, don't know what that word means.
And the biggest one is that they should have been at the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just going to throw water on the whole thing. I can't believe we spent this much time on something so inconsequential and stupid. Let's move on.
Bah humbug. There are a lot of hot topics discussed by the players, by the GMs, the Board of Governors meeting that came up throughout the weekend. Everyone's talking about goalie interference these days. I think we should too. Do you think there's going to be a resolution here, or is it kind of like what Peter Laviolette said, which was, It's so subjective that you're never going to find a black and white ruling.
Yeah, I don't think that you're ever going to get any kind of consensus on this. As long as there's video replay and you can keep going back and watching it, they convened a meeting. Coley Campbell, the director of hockey operations, convened a meeting Saturday morning with Dave Jackson and Wes McCauley, the referees that were involved, you know, the coaches that were involved, some of the GMs that were around for the Board of Governors meeting and the hockey ops department. And they had a bunch of examples that they watched and, you know, in slow motion and everything. And they, you know, it was scattergun around the room. Yeah, that's goaltender. No, that's not goaltender interference. Yeah, but what about this? What about that? So as long as you're going to have video replay, you're going to have different interpretations of what goaltender interference is and what isn't. Now, we don't want to go back to the day where it's the foot in the crease.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to stop it, that's what you got to do. You got to go back to foot in the crease.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody wants to do that, but if that's what you want, that's what you're going to have to do. And I mean, Gary Bettman made it very clear in his address to the media that they've made, and I get the sense that Bettman is not happy about this.
Yeah.
What he said and what the league is going to direct the officials to do is to, you know, unless you look at the rules again, it's like a lot of other things in the NHL. When you look at the rule and you apply the rule, it's much easier. The rule basically says that in video replay, if there's no conclusive evidence to overturn the call on the ice, then the call on the ice stands. So I think what the league is going to say to the referees is, look, if you have to, and if there's a coach's challenge or whatever, take a good look at it, take a quick look at it, but don't sit there and analyze it 50 different ways to Sunday and analyze it. And I think the words he used were to death.
Yeah.
You know, so if you see something that is, you know, conclusive and overturns it, by all means overturn it. If you don't go looking for it. And I think that's what they're thinking right now, is that the referees are starting to go and look for things. And that's where you get the delays. That's where you get the confusion. That's where you get the frustration. And I assume there's going to be less of that. But I think unless you take video replay out or you make it black and white, you're going to have this debate. You're going to continue to have this debate.
And I think it's become pretty obvious where the players are at right now. When you see, you know, the brightest young stars in the game, Connor McDavid, yep. Auston Matthews, and then with the sort of, I mean, that was a funny one with the offside call on Erik Karlsson leading to Jack Eichel and Auston Matthews emphatically pointing on Eichel's goal. I mean, that was a great moment in that game. But you're starting to see these guys really, like, sort of give it to the officials, and you never see that in hockey, especially from young players, especially from guys as respectful as McDavid and Matthews are. But it's come to a head, and I think, you know, I mean, the league realizes that it has a bit of an image problem right now when it comes to these things. We're always talking about creating more offense, and here you have, with goalie interference and with the offside, you have two things hindering it in a boring way. That's the worst part, is like, not only is it not a goal, but we had to wait 5 minutes of real time to determine it wasn't a goal when it really looked like a goal.
Right. Yeah.
So I think I'm glad they had that meeting. I'm glad Bettman said what he did at the availability. I thought he was pretty on point there. And hopefully in the second half, we can just see things a little more chill.
And it's interesting, I talked to Alex Ovechkin about it on Saturday, and he said, it pisses me off because it's already so hard to score. And it's not a good sign when the leading goal scorer in the league is complaining that it's too hard to score.
Yeah.
I think you know you have a problem. And the suggestion he made was just, it was kind of, I call it the oh come on defense, when you kind of look at it and say, oh come on. And he said, if it's a little tap, you know it's not affecting the goalie. If you deck the goalie, you know it's interference. That is still subjective, but it almost makes me think of, could it work in a world where you get rid of the review and you just have them call it like pass interference in football, where you're not going to get it right every time and players can complain, but you're going to get it right probably, you know, 80% of the time, and it just gets the flow back in the game.
The thing to me, though, is, and I wrote this in my blog yesterday on THN.com, is that, you know, I mean, people are saying, you know, I said, why do we even have video replay for that?
Yeah.
What's the point? Like, if it were resulting in a definitive call that everyone was on board with, okay, great. And somebody tweeted to me, well, why don't we just go back to reading tea leaves? That's what we're doing now.
Yeah.
We're just doing it on video.
Yeah.
You know, so why do we need that? Like, I personally think, as far as the players are concerned and most of the fans are concerned, that people would be okay with dealing with the referee's call on the ice in real time. And if he makes a mistake, he makes a mistake. And I think people would be okay with that. Yeah. And it's the same thing with the offside rule. You know, like, give it back to the referees. If they make a mistake, they make a mistake. I mean, okay, occasionally you have the Matt Duchene goal from a couple of years ago, and that's egregious and everything. But, I mean, for the most part, I think these guys, you know, I'm a bit of a referee critic too, but these guys are the best in the world at what they do.
Yeah.
And for the most part, the vast majority of the time, they get it right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't remember, you know, like, growing up as a kid watching hockey and being like, oh, that was offside, like, when it led to a goal. It didn't seem to happen that often.
Yeah.
Right. And now it's like, any goal, the first thing you do is look to the blue line, and then as soon as they're showing just the regular goal on the replay, you're like, oh, who's at the blue line? Oh, maybe it's possibly offside. Yeah. It's like people are being programmed now to want to challenge every single play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
At least the penalty deterrent has worked really well. It's reduced it by, I think, 40% in terms of the number of challenges. But it seems like, again, the overthinking thing, and it's just the minutia of it. It's the 1 millimeter of skate off the ice puts a player offside. It feels like it's, yes, okay, technically it's true, but it's violating the spirit of the rule.
Right.
Which is like, they don't want a player cheating, but it's like, okay, his skate plane is a millimeter off the ice.
He was trying.
That's where I find, I would like to see the line drop.
I don't want it to turn into the NFL where it's like, is that a catch? Did he have possession? Is that okay? Yeah. We're going to do it again.
And after every catch or every play, like, the players bounce up. One guy's doing the flag mode of it.
Yeah,
the offensive player is immediately waving for the flag, and the defensive guy is doing the no catch thing.
Like, yeah.
After every play. We're entering the second half, the unofficial second half. The season's already halfway over, but a lot of people call after the All-Star break the second half. Just curious about checking in with your Stanley Cup picks. at the beginning of the season, as a magazine consensus, we had Pittsburgh over Edmonton.
Okay, I'm changing that one.
Yeah, let's change the Western pick. But who do you guys like for the Stanley Cup right now? Has your pick changed over the course of the season?
I think that I'm, you know, not, we're not splitting the atom here. I think most people would say Tampa Bay at this point.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they've got, you know, they had four guys at the All-Star game. That doesn't mean anything because it was there, but they could have had more probably. Yeah. I mean, the Palat injury hurts them a bit in the short term, but I don't think it's going to be a huge thing for them. He'll be back by the, you know, well in time for the playoffs to start. And he's a really good playoff player. You know, kind of sort of guy, two-way guy, can shut down, can maybe get the odd point here or there. You know, I just don't see a huge gap in the roster. You know, we've talked about it, you know, maybe a backup goalie, maybe another right shot defenseman that can, you know, bolster their top four. And, you know, we'll probably see that come down the pike, whether it's a Mike Green or, you know, I mean, we're going to talk about this Eric Carlson thing. I find that a stretch, but you know, I think they're going to supplement their roster, because the good thing about the Tampa Bay Lightning is they're set up well now and they're set up well for the future. So even if they make a trade at the deadline for a quote unquote rental, like say a Mike Green or someone that they deem will put them over the top, they're not going to be mortgaging the future to do it.
Yeah. Tampa Bay has been my favorite for the Cup. And it's interesting with Palat and Victor Hedman, for that matter. You know, injuries are never good, but at the same time, if you wanted to find a silver lining, all of a sudden these guys are getting a bit of a rest.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like they're not going to be playing a full 82. They're going to miss some back-to-backs and things like that. So when it gets to the playoffs, they might be a little more fresh than some of the other starters in the league, and that can only help. I will say, it's not even really a dark horse because they're really good, but the Boston Bruins are looking really scary right now. And you gotta think, like, okay, well, how long can they ride this momentum? Are they peaking too early? And I can understand that line of argument. But when it comes down to it, you look at that, it's like, man, that's like it's a playoff team. You know, I mean, if you got Patrice Bergeron, you can shut down anybody in the NHL. You can shut down anybody in the world. You got heavy guys like David Backes, like, you know, like Chara. I know he's not like the most fleet of foot, and but I mean, he takes up a lot of room, and again, plays a heavy game. You got Charlie McAvoy, and you know, he just got cleared from that heart problem, so that's great to hear. But that's another kid that already he has been super clutch in his career. Mm-hmm. You know, dating back to the World Juniors. And you can toss him out for half an hour a night if you have to, and he'll still be effective. So they really have some nice weapons, and Tuukka Rask is playing some of the best hockey in his NHL career. It's like, I was looking at it in Boston. I mean, you talk about being in the top 10 when it comes to like offense, defense, and special teams. They're up there in all those categories. Like, they tick all the boxes right now.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. I'm still in the Tampa camp. I would really like to see Yzerman get aggressive, because they're in a window right now where in two seasons, Kucherov and Braden Point get their big contract extensions. So they're in a position where they can make an aggressive move. They can make a rental, but they can make even more than a rental right now. I think their cap is not as bad as it's going to be in a couple of years. I don't know if it can be Erik Karlsson, because the Lightning's farm system isn't high-end enough to be able to get a Karlsson unless you trade Sergachev. You'd have to include Sergachev, I think, to be able to get Karlsson. But you never know. Maybe Yzerman is feeling a little crazy. I don't see it happening, though. I think a Mike Green type of trade is much more likely, where you surrender, you know, a first-round pick and Taylor Radish or Libor Hayek. We've talked about that before.
Yeah, the Karlsson trade to me doesn't have trade deadline flavor to it.
No, it's more draft.
That's a draft. That's a draft.
You don't want to rush that one. Yeah, yeah.
That's a Gary Bettman, we have a trade. I also think in the West, we can't forget about Nashville.
No, absolutely not.
They're so deep, and we know how good that defense core is. Pekka Rinne is actually, even analytically, he's playing well. He's not just the fake good anymore, and he's fixed those home road splits. He's actually been better on the road this year than at home for the first time, I believe, in his career. And the Predators, they're still deep at center now. They're deeper than they have been in the past with they got Johansson, Turris, Bonino. And we always know that David Poile is the best bet of any GM to do something crazy.
The gunslinger.
Right, he's the cowboy. Him and Jim Rutherford. So I think we can expect at this point, almost every year, the Predators are going to make some kind of upgrade. Mm. So I wouldn't rule that out. I'm thinking a Tampa Bay-Nashville final is in the offing. Mm. My prediction right there. I mean, that's not exactly a bold prediction.
Right.
But I'm kind of hoping for a Nashville-Vegas Western Conference final.
Oh, man.
I don't know if I'd be covering any of that.
Right.
Imagine.
After game five, your liver might just say forget it.
I was going to say, I don't think it's over.
This is over. I can't do this anymore.
The National Hockey Press, there would be like casualties.
Yeah, that would be devastating. Yeah. Wow. Let's move to some reader questions now. The first one is literally from my dad. It's just a good question, okay? I'm not trying to be a nepotist here, but I mean, it's just...
What makes Matt Larkin so great?
The question is, I love you, son. I'm proud of you. Well, that's not a question. Okay, here's the question, okay? From my former hockey parent. Curious to know views on 8-year-old kids, good players, not low level, playing in a league that doesn't record score and has no playoffs. Is that good or bad for the game and its future? Interesting question. I know there's been talk of at the minor hockey levels shifting to that mentality. From what I understand, that is what they do a lot more commonly in Europe.
Yep.
And I think it's worked very well. And the other thing they do in Europe is they develop players' individual skills a lot more, and they don't do as much team play, right?
Right, and they play cross ice, and they've been doing it for years. And they're, you know, I mean, Hockey Canada is implementing cross ice for kids 8 and under. The only problem is that the helicopter parents, some of the helicopter parents in, let's say, the center of the hockey universe, think that it's a good idea, but it's not a good idea for their little Johnny because he's so good,
right?
which drives me crazy. Anyways, I don't know if there's a middle ground here, but I'd rather see that than seeing 8-year-olds on these super AAA traveling type teams. Because I think, you know, even in Canada, and I see it all the time, my wife's a teacher and she has, you know, 14 boys in her class. I think 2 of them play hockey. I mean, not everybody plays, and it's a tough sell in this country. And if you want to continue to cultivate players, you don't want the bottleneck to start when they're 8 years old, you know? So for me, I think having it this way where you play cross ice, you don't keep stats, it's kind of really loose and fun. I mean, all of the studies have shown, you know, cross ice hockey, the kids get X number of more touches. There's this many more shots. There's this many more puck battles. There's, you know, skill development, blah, 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 the whole deal. I mean, it's overwhelming in favor of cross ice hockey for kids that age. And if there's one or two outlier kids who are better than the others, well, you know what? Maybe those kids will help drag along the other kids and make them better too. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with it.
Yeah, I'm good with it too. And just anecdotally, there's a skill coach named Daryl Belfry. He actually works with the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. But some of his clients in the past have included John Tavares, Patrick Kane, essentially the best hockey players in the world when it comes to skills. This is the guy they go to hone their skills. And Daryl would run camps for kids, and they wouldn't play games until the very end. Like, I think they would have scrimmages now and then, but like in terms of a game, that would be like at the very end of the session. And the whole idea was to build up certain skills and to grow and to, you know, to pull off certain moves. And you would get, so, you know, the whole idea was when you actually got to the game, the final score didn't matter. It was, did you pull off that move? Were you able to use that in a game situation, all these things you had learned? And this is the guy that's training the most elite players in the summer. That was his strategy when dealing with young kids. And if it's good enough for him, it's certainly good enough for me.
Yeah, and, you know, this is not the everybody gets a trophy mentality that we've seen and the entitlement that we all sort of have looked at and seen and people have interpreted in different ways. That's not this. Mm-hmm. This is about, like Ryan said, this is about developing skills, okay? And secondly, the second thing I'll say is, yeah, you know, all these great young American kids that are coming up into the NHL right now, the Brock Bessers, the Austin Matthews, the Clayton Kellers, the Charlie McAvoys, all those guys played under those circumstances when they were little kids. They played cross ice hockey in this kind of environment. doesn't seem to have hurt them.
Yeah,
that's right. And the other thing a lot of those kids did was play multiple sports other than hockey. Like Brock Besser played a lot of baseball, and it reminds me of I think of conversations with Jonathan Quick and Corey Schneider, and Quick was passionate almost. I mean, he's always kind of angry, but he was especially angry about this, the idea that kids play hockey year-round. It's bad for their development. He talked about he was a running back in football, and that's part of how he got his great athleticism because he learned different skills. And Corey Crawford's view on it is even more alarmist, and he said, you're getting goalies now who are teenagers getting labral tears in their hips. That's usually an injury that in previous generations you get when you're 37 years old, but from overuse, these kids that are only doing one sport are getting these repetitive stress injuries.
Well, people should read a book. It's called Selling the Dream.
This is why Ken has such good things to say on this topic.
And anyways, in researching that book, I spoke with Michael Clarfield, who's been the team doctor for the Toronto Maple Leafs, for the Canadian Olympic teams, ballet companies, everything. And he told me, he said he's, along the lines of what you said, Matt, is he's seeing kids at the age of 13, 14, 15 who are coming in with repetitive stress injuries that they previously didn't see until guys were like in their 30s. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's as good a reason as any to pull back rather than have too much.
Yeah, and one more point on this. There was a great article in the New York Times magazine a couple of years ago about American soccer and how Americans just weren't producing the amount of elite soccer players that you would think based on, you know, the population and how many kids played. And what they found was American soccer was all based off games. And it continued, you know, through high school and even into the NCAA. Whereas you go to Europe and you look at Ajax, which is one of the most vaunted programs in all of Europe, and they are consistently developing players. And in their system, you develop skills. You don't play a lot of games. You develop the skills, and once you get to that, you know, late teen level, then you start playing games. But at that point, you have such a huge foundation of skills that you're light years ahead of these American kids who were playing, like, you know, 50 games a summer or whatever it was.
Right.
Interesting. Good points and good question, Dad, I guess. Next up, we have a guy who's not related to me, Ryan DeLong. And Ryan's question is, can you please give an example of what the Jets can do to improve? Names, please. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I know I've been looking at the Jets a lot lately because they're such a deep team. They have very few obvious holes other than those created by injuries. Right now, Jacob Trouba and Mark Scheifele, but they should both be back for the playoffs. The Jets' power play this year has been fantastic. It's finally improved, but their penalty killing has been mediocre. So I think what the Jets need is a center who can win faceoffs, kill penalties. So I would say Antoine Vermette, if you want a name. Yeah. That's the type of player I think that could really help the Jets.
Yeah, I had a similar thought where, yeah, I think their penalty kill right now is like 12th. It's just kind of there. And we're really like sort of, you know, nitpicking here, because the Jets are, like you say, they're pretty stacked. Carl Hagelin was a name that I was thinking of. You know, he's not having a great season with Pittsburgh, but he is a penalty killer, and he's got great speed. So, you know, if you're looking for somebody to supplement your core, but you don't want to break the bank, you know, I think Carl Hagelin would be a pretty good option there.
Yeah, I mean, touch-ups, I guess, for this team would be good, but, I mean, could they go out and, you know, make a big splash at the deadline, like get a Mike Green, or, you know, reunite the Tanev brothers. I don't know. Maybe something like that.
There's your headline right there.
Yeah.
And the Jets are in an interesting spot because, I mean, Kevin Cheveldayoff has been a pretty conservative GM, but now he's reached that critical mass in this farm system where we, I mean, in our future watch, the Jets were number one two of the past 3 years. And you don't necessarily have to move a guy like Jack Roslovic, who's going to be very popular. But the Jets, even the Jets' secondary prospects are as good as many teams' primary prospects.
Yeah.
So you could trade Eric Comrie. You have Connor Hellebuck established as your long-term number one goalie now.
Yeah.
Eric Comrie's still a pretty good goaltending prospect. Sure. Or even Nick Batan, Brendan Lemieux, guys like that are sort of the B-plus level prospects. Yeah. You can package those guys. And I also think the Jets don't really need to use their upcoming first-round picks because they're just so loaded with talent. And now you have Kyle Connor's made the team and Josh Morrissey's finally blossomed. So they're in a great position. If they decide they want to be aggressive, they can really have some nice assets to offer. Next one, this is called, this guy's or gal is called Somewhat Educated, at Leo Educated, so I guess it's a guy. And the question is, will the Bruins make a move before the trade deadline?
You know what? I was thinking about this, and I feel like, again, I mean, maybe they do something minor, but I look at that Bruins squad, it's like, why mess with it? Like I said earlier, like, they're really good in all categories, and, you know, with McAvoy, I mean, he's so young. He just has so much energy, and he can make such a big impact. I think he's going to be a playoff performer. I mean, as long as they're healthy, I think they're in a situation where, you know, they've got a pretty veteran squad, and they've got a lot of depth, but it's in a sort of interesting way where a lot of their depth is kind of like bottom six, and that's fine because you need those guys come playoff time, and they're getting a lot of good experience now. But I would honestly just kind of stand pat. Unless something fell into their laps that really made sense, I think, you know, the Bruins should just go with this core and grow this group. And, you know, I mean, they're probably going to have to go through Tampa Bay in order to make a run. So, you know, the odds are a little stacked against them. But on the other hand, if they beat Tampa Bay, and I could see it happening based on how deep the Bruins are, I think that, you know, they could very well make a bit of a surprise run.
It's funny because this team from last year, I think the only player they added was Paul Postma.
Jeez. That's right.
From the offseason. Yeah. Okay. So you're looking at a team that's been together. It's solidified. There's a lot of chemistry there. So I mean, certainly not a big splash, but you know, see, the trade deadline now to me is like it's the point in the year when you got to wait until the Stanley Cup's over to see how all the dust cleared, because it's always just that little tweak that some teams made. Like a couple of years ago, LA went out and got Michael Hanzus. Mm-hmm. That turned out to be the best trade at the trade deadline, right? You know, so if they can go out and, you know, make maybe a small, you know, a small deal, like something that, you know, gives them another depth defenseman for their top six, or, you know, another good forward that they can plug in there and won't cost them much, then that might be the way they go. Because this is a team that's, you know, that's proved that when they are healthy and together, they're a cohesive unit. You know, their young guys have really stepped up, the Jake DeBrusks. And, you know, I mean, Ryan Spooner's not so young, but I mean, he's really emerging, you know, guys like that, you know, Charlie McAvoy, of course. So I would caution against anything too dramatic. And I don't think that they would be thinking that way anyways.
Yeah, Don Sweeney, I don't think is going to be crazy aggressive. I see it a little bit differently. I mean, they have been great, especially since Bruce Cassidy took over almost a year ago, right? Mm. So the record over that past year has been fantastic. I still think looking at the roster on paper, if they want to measure up to Tampa Bay, which they may as well start doing, they need their second line to be more dangerous, right? And they need like a legit 30-goal type threat. So I would love to see Boston acquire, I mean, probably not within their own division, but you never know, a Mike Hoffman or a Max Pacioretty would be the perfect fit, in my opinion. But that would also cost a lot. So to your point, Ken, if you wanted something cheaper, what if you could make the money work? What if you bring in Rick Nash? Because I think the Rangers are just ready to get rid of him.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I was actually thinking about Rick Nash to the Bruins.
Yeah, because then you could put, like, Nash, I still think he's still talented enough that in the right situation could be reinvigorated. And maybe he could play on the second line and just give that extra dimension. That way, if you shut down the Marchand, Bergeron, Pasternak line, it's not like, okay, well, we're done. We stopped their powerhouse line. So I don't know. I'm curious if that could just give him one nice little spark for a career resurgence.
That's intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's it for this week, everybody. We're excited for the stretch run to start, and I'm sure we'll be talking about lots more trade deadline buzz in the podcasts to come. Thanks for listening.